Welcome everyone to Lynn's Bends. I'm Lynn Ferguson, also known as Lynn Tennyson, your host here on the show, where we discuss Black life all over the world, but mostly in America, and also music. Join me in welcoming an amazingly talented artist who DJs and former talent scout who's graced the Bandlot platform, a traveling and family-oriented performer, DJ TJ BK, has 5 albums available through his Bandlot page, almost 20,000 plays, and is bilingual. He's a part of 4 bands, including Musimentation, Faire La Fête, Future Vibes, and World Road. May you enjoy a good welcome, DJ. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me here. Thank you for inviting me to your show.
Most definitely. No, I'm so happy you could be here. You could join me. Thank you for accepting the invitation. How are you feeling today?
I'm very excited. Very excited about the opportunity to answer the questions and speak with you about the issues that I feel affect our society.
Of course, of course. Well, if you want to get into that, we could definitely bring you back for another interview or a segment in the future where you could be a special speaker or guest. Or if if we just happen to get into it during this interview, then we could definitely do that. But this is more focused on your music, but it's your interview. So just lead me wherever you want to go. I am going to start by asking you, what are your musical inspirations? Who inspires you musically? What's your muse when it comes to producing your content?
Well, inspired by a lot of artists from the Caribbean, reggae music and jazz, some Afro-Cuban jazz, and music that is native to West Africa, and also music that's, I guess, played around the world, because I'm not really tied to any one genre of music, so I like to expose myself to a variety of different musical styles.
Of course. It would be so much better if everybody did that. then we'd really have music, to listen to instead of what we hear in the mainstream. So what are your origins? You spoke about all this music from a lot of different places that inspire you, like the Caribbean and West Africa. Where are you from?
Well, I was born in Jamaica, and I grew up in New York, and the music in the Caribbean, there's many different styles, and each country has different styles of music, so I was influenced by a lot of the neighboring countries' music, and you have, in Jamaica, of course, you have reggae. You also have the steel drum music out of Trinidad and reggaeton of Puerto Rico. And so there's a lot of neighboring islands with different styles of music that kind of all form together. Every once in a while, they influence each other, and then they advance, into new styles of music that develop.
Definitely, definitely. What's your favorite of all the ones you just listed?
The favorite style?
Mm-hmm.
I am a big fan of Afro-Cuban jazz that kind of was a mixture of native West African drumming and then influenced also by the American jazz movement that developed over the past century. So it's one of my favorite styles. That's probably my favorite style of music.
Definitely. Now, I charge for my music. I charge for collaborations and things like that. People actually give me a lot of trouble for that, but that's a whole nother story. I want to know, I'd like to know, how do you earn money through music?
Well, I don't earn money through music, but I do apply music to how I market other projects that I work on. So, because I've worked on information technology and marketing and media, the music has been a tool in developing different promotion platforms for other projects. Music has always been a hobby for me, and it's not something that I've really considered even to do professionally. It's just until recently that I started to really focus more on the music as opposed to the other projects that I work on.
And why is that? Why did you start focusing on it more recently?
Well, I've always had music in my life because from a very young age, I was trained on different instruments. And so it being a hobby, it was always around. There was always music playing from I was a young child. And just looking at the opportunity to kind of, I guess, promote some of the next generation of artists and to kind of also record the history of the music that I'm familiar with. And so I decided to kind of push more of my own music out.
Okay. Well, how do you apply music to helping the community? I know you've mentioned that before.
Well, music is a form of communication, and it has different purposes in that it's viewed as entertainment, but it's also a tool. They used to use drums for
preparing
for battle, and you know that still continued into using trumpets to prepare for battle. So it's a way to communicate, and it's also a way to influence as a form of communication, to influence others.
Of course. Now, a lot of people don't know the history, especially the Black history of music that transcends time periods, that transcends barriers of race and culture, and actually does so to bring certain cultures together in one unified cause, like humanitarian causes for the Black community in America back in the 60s and 50s, more recently with, you know, artists, amazing, world-renowned, legendary artists like Nina Simone, Billie Holiday, who did the epic and legendary Strange Fruit, and you know, speaking about Black bodies hanging from trees as if they were some strange fruit blowing in the summer breeze. And then you've got people like Eartha Kitt, who was shunned by her own community in America for the influences she had on society, politics, things like that. She was blacklisted by the government, by the FBI, I believe, or CIA, and she ended up having to move out of America and over to Europe just to, you know, survive and function because she was so, you know, despised by her community and by America. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh yes, Nina Simone, she definitely was very political in her songs and in a way, was that was a form of a media, the way that she was able to perform that those messages and still entertain. And yes, a lot of during that time period, a lot of artists, they did have to travel to Europe to get a better opportunity to handle the very difficult situation that was going on during that time period. So, it was very difficult for those early jazz artists to kind of achieve with all the struggles that were going on, like Duke Ellington and Ella Fitzgerald, and you know, it was a very difficult time period to overcome.
Yeah, most definitely. There was something else I was gonna say. Oh yeah, and you know, it's kind of crazy because now we have, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, the stuff that is mainstream is not like real music, a lot of it. And that's a part of the degradation and destruction of what we're speaking about. And of, you know, it's a part of the prevention of that very thing happening in modern times with modern music. You know, we don't have enough music that is used the same way it was used culturally right. and politically. So, you know, now it's gotten to the point where they've, you know, gotten their hands in the industry so deeply, you know, and we're so deeply entrenched with this permeating, you know, notion that everything needs to be about, you know, everything needs to be degraded, and it needs to be about sex, and it needs to be about drugs, and it needs to be about killing and stealing and hurting people, to the point at which we've got that as the new mantra. It's the new, you know, like you were saying, music is used for a lot of different things. One of those things is enchants, and to perform enchantments, to perform right. To perform rituals and certain spiritual ends. And you know, now we've got a lot of dark music out here,
yes,
that is, you know, just stuck in people's heads, and people are constantly being programmed, basically,
right, with negative messages.
Think a certain way, you know, you think about the old music back in our parents' time and some of our grandparents' time back in the 70s and 60s and 50s, and a lot of that music at the time, it was about peace, no right. war.
Yeah,
it was about the stuff we were talking about with race and preventing humanitarian crises. And you know, people had a better mindset, you know, and a lot more changes took place. You know, we may think that we are, you know, so progressive right now, but we're actually making less majorly progressive movements politically right. and in society, at least forward and not backward. You know, we're making less of those forward and more of them backward nowadays than we did back in the 60s. You know, we got civil rights back in the 50s and 60s and stuff. So like, you know, now it's like, you know, we're losing civil rights. Women are losing rights. Different minorities are losing rights. Black people are losing rights.
Right. It's, it's, well, it's in a way a cycle as history often repeats itself, because there's time periods when there was kind of a similar trend in the music, and so it's not completely a new situation, because like in the 1920s there was time period when the music was getting like more, I guess, explicit, and then it really was a period similar to like it was the, you know, the music of now. And then during the 30s, you know, in jazz, there was more, I guess, of a more return to kind of normalcy. So
you're so right about that. And I never really noticed or thought about it until you just said this. But you're very right in what you're trying to describe with the 20s being like a heightening of raunchiness.
And yes, like, exactly.
And like, you know, it wasn't just the music, but it was definitely the music, but it was also the shows that were being put on,
right. Yeah.
And things like that. You know, you had the cabarets, you had the like, what do you call those places with the pinup dolls? What do you call those? Cirque? Not Cirque. What do you call those shows? Burlesque. Mm-hmm. Yeah, burlesque, yeah, shows, yeah, happening where women were, you know, revealing themselves, and that was right. one of the you know, earlier forms of what we know today as like sex work and stripping. And you know, you had everybody was smoking cigarettes, everybody was drinking,
right?
And not saying that there's anything necessarily wrong with those things individually, but you know, everything in moderation. But and there is something inherently wrong with cigarettes, and what do you call it, at least the way they're made today. And it was very similar to what's going on now. You know, we've got a much more, you know, a much less reserved version, right, of what, exactly, they had back then. But compared to how reserved we were in the 70s to how, right, how we are now, it's not that much of a difference. Just like the 20s compared to 20 or 30 years before the 20s is not that much of a difference.
Right, exactly.
So it is.
Exactly. That's excellent way to describe it. Yeah, so because it's a cycle, and the so it's likely that it's not going to stay like the way it is now. The mainstream music is likely not to stay like that. It usually,
no,
like during the time periods, and as time periods change, then the music kind of changes with that, you know?
Yeah, the world is getting crazy. I mean, California's on fire, and it has been for years now. Okay. Australia, the bush in Australia is on fire, and everything outside of that, like, you know, you've got droughts, record droughts all over the world, and flooding. You know, shit's really hitting the fan politically, racially, socially, you know. So like, I think now we're going to start seeing within the next 5 years, 3 to 5 years, a turnover to better music, because, yeah, people are going to need to get it out in the music, because there's no nowhere else to get it out.
Right, exactly. And
people are going to get sick of the bullshit.
Right. Music as such a popular form of expression, and it has been for so long that it kind of expresses the conditions of the people, you know, and the people can, whether they realize it or not, they're really just describing kind of what they see, you know, in music. It's art, and they're creating an image of
what?
Oh, I'm sorry. So they're creating an image of what they see around them, their surroundings, you know, and what's going on, and so it's like documenting what is their condition.
Definitely. Well, what do? You sound very educated, and like you probably do something pretty important. What do you do, and where are you now?
Well, now I'm in San Antonio, Texas, and I work in customer service answering the phone.
Oh, that's my kind of job. Get me a job there. I'm sick of working in the store.
Oh, wow. It's a little out of work, but if you can get used to it, I guess it's not too bad.
Oh, no, that's what I do. That's what my 9 years of experience is in. I'm a jeweler right now at Hellsberg Diamonds. I'm a manager in training, a store manager in training.
Oh, wow. That's excellent.
Yeah, I just took the job. So, it is pretty good money, but like, I hate standing all day and I hate working, you know, with people face to face all day. I like working with people on the phone.
Right.
And that's what I'm used to, because I don't have to like get dressed up and I don't have to be on my P's and Q's all day, you know, looking and sounding and speaking the part and, you know, everything. Like, it's all you have to worry about in customer service from home is whether or not you vocally sound okay.
Yeah, it could be a lot of strain on the voice though. After sometimes all day on the phone, it could.
It's horrible. It is, but it's much better than exerting yourself physically all day in all these other different ways. Like, if all you have to do is worry about your voice, especially a person like me who's done it for over 9 years, just sat at a desk, you know, working either from home or in the office, you know, or in a call center, doing customer service.
Oh, yes.
Like, that's what I mean. Like, that's literally what I do. So I'm used to it personally, but I know people who are not used to it. Definitely what you're saying applies.
Yeah, but I'm not used to it because I worked in IT prior to that. I worked in technology.
What? You left that to go to customer service? Tech is more money, isn't it?
Oh, yes, definitely. I worked in IT for almost 18 years, and it's for young people, you know. They really want the young people in those jobs because you can kind of train them more, and they have.
Well, yeah, and because the older you get, the further away from the technology you get, unfortunately.
Yes, like, that's so true.
Yeah. Like, I'm not even old, you know. I'm 27. I was born in 1994, and what do you call it? I feel old compared to people who are younger than me, because like they, you know, I technically grew up with dial-up internet, AOL and shit. So yeah, like, you know, so like, you know, it everything was changing when I was a kid. You know, we still have pagers when I was a little kid and all kinds of stuff. So like. I've seen all of the different types of phones and all the different types of computers and everything. So like, you know, if it's hard for me to keep up and I'm in my 20s, then they're definitely going to want to keep people who are, you know, 30 something and younger.
Yes, that's really the key to IT is
to
be that young, because I mean, when I was growing up and there was something called a floppy disk.
I remember floppy disks. Okay. The square floppy disks.
Well, the ones that were actually floppy, the ones that you could actually, the big ones that you could.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't know about those.
Okay, yes. That's a long while back, but they used to have, the disks were actually floppy. You could actually bend them.
Stop it. I just remember the square hard ones that you put in your computer and shit. It didn't go, there was a CD player on the computer and then there was a floppy player or whatever.
Right. But before that, there was an actual floppy disk. That's what I started on computers on, and you know, it's changed so much now where, you know, the technology that they have now, you could put maybe, you know, I guess 5 million floppy disks on a storage drive, a USB drive. That's crazy.
That is crazy. Well, what do you, so that's what you do as your day job, or is it not?
Yes.
Okay. So now you've informed me you were a talent scout in the past. Why did you stop doing that?
Well, I was a talent scout in New York, and it was, I mean, it's a lot of work. What we were doing, we were just going out looking for talent, looking for models, singers, hand models, and so you'd approach people and then you'd invite them to a session where they would be briefed on how to create like a presentation for the different agencies, and it was just a lot of work recruiting people. And so it was one of many jobs. I've had many jobs. And so it was one of many jobs that I had.
Definitely, definitely. So I hear it was a failing industry. Or was that something else you were telling me that was failing?
Well, it's as far as the talent scout was, it's something that has changed a lot with
social media.
Social media, because now, you know, now it's the social media has really revolutionized a lot of industries, and not just the social media, but like with automation, and so a lot of skill sets that were once done by humans, they've now are being done by robots, and social media is now a form of automation of that talent scout industry. So now that you have social media, you don't need talent scouts anymore.
It makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. Well, how did you find out about BandLab, by the way?
I run Cakewalk. I was making instrumentals with Cakewalk. Cakewalk used to be a program called Sonar. And way back in the day, I was using Sonar. And back in the day, I also ran a program called Cubase. And with Cakewalk now, I was running it for a while, a couple of years, and then one time they made me sign in to activate it. And to activate it, I had to create a BandLab account. I was familiar with the platform before, but I never really was on it too much. But after creating the account, then I got to check it out and meet a whole crew of wonderful artists like yourself, you know, very talented, gifted artists that I've met on the platform.
Definitely. Well, does anyone help you with the production or creation process of your music?
Oh yes, it's a lot of teamwork, helping with, I guess, from the songwriting to the actual beats to the mixing. It's working as a team, trying to create unique sounds, different sounds.
All right. Well, and you said you're working with a team with, what was the name again?
Well, for different songs, like for example, with it's not necessarily collaboration, but when you're working like with the pushing out music for the bands, then I have to give credit to like Calico and Charlene and for influencing writing like Black Rose and Queen Sun, and then for like a lot of the mixing, you know, I learned a lot of mixing from other producers, and so people that have way more equipment, because I'm mixing, I use Cakewalk to mix. I use Cakewalk and some other programs on the computer, but there's some professionals that have like home studios that are like recording studios, so you could always learn a lot from them as well, like DJ Tech One. And then for marketing and promotion, you know, I learned from like some other producers like King Joker JA and Tiffany Dewberry. It's a lot of I guess collaborative work, collaborative process, a collaborative artistic process.
Mm-hmm.
And then also for writing songs and promoting, pushing songs like Foy 55. So there's a lot of artists that I've learned from, and many that I've learned from the BandLab platform I met on there.
Definitely. Well, how did you find music, or did it find you in life?
Music found me because my first instrument I started playing at 7. I was trained first on the violin, then the piano.
Oh, wow.
And drums. And so music has always been kind of around me from when I was very young. My mother's a piano teacher, so I had to play piano. I didn't have a choice.
Most piano players never do. Did you practice your
arpeggios? Skills. Yeah, so I had to play and learn a lot of like classical music, a lot of like the classical composers like Bach and Mozart, Liszt, Tchaikovsky.
So
I was very familiar with a lot of the classical composers from when I was young.
That's amazing. Well, what was your first doll? Was it Sonar, or was it something else?
So when I started with working with electronic music, it was, okay, so I worked a lot with MIDI. And so a lot of the MIDI tools, they weren't considered DAWs, but I guess now, like most of the DAWs, they integrate MIDI, but I use separate tools for MIDI than like actual recording audio. Sonar was great because you could record WAV files and Cubase. And one thing I like about Cakewalk is that you can apply your Cubase plugins to you can actually install Cubase plugins in Cakewalk and run Cubase plugins with Cakewalk.
Oh wow!
But there's a MIDI MIDI, I guess, like workbench kind of thing. That's called Anvil Studio. And I used that back in the day too as well when Sonar was out. And it's, I still use it today too for MIDI. It's pretty neat.
Wow. And for all of the people out here, a Cubase is a digital audio workstation developed by
Steinberg,
yeah, for music and MIDI recordings. So, and MIDI are those little instruments that are built into your, usually into a DAW system, a digital audio workstation. They help, you know, they allow you to use, like, you know, template instruments, like, you know, all the different scales and stuff like that, for arranging and editing and stuff. The first version, which was originally only a MIDI, so that's what you were kind of speaking about.
Because the MIDI, well, back then, they had sound cards. You had to get a sound card for your computer, you know, to play the sounds. Because early computers, they could only play, like, you know, bell sounds. And then if you, you know, installed your sound card, then the sounds were, like, a little bit richer. However, it's nothing compared to today. You know, it's technology as far as the ability to store information and the ability to process information has advanced a lot, because you used to have to get an external sound card to get, you know, a really good sound. But nowadays, with with these DAWs, you can really make some rich sounds without need for all the professional equipment.
Well, that is really cool. What's your I want to ask first, with whom do you want to work musically? So, like, they could be a famous person, or just someone you want to work with who you haven't had the chance to yet, like on BandLab or something.
That would be you.
Stop it.
Because of your range, and because you always make uplifting music, and, you know, very talented. So.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so what's your favorite song since it's me?
Well, I like Cherry Wine.
Stop it.
I like that rock song that you did. I think last week you made that rock song.
Which one?
It was a rock song. And then that the electronic beat that you made.
Now Shinji made the beat, but I did the lyrics and the vocal.
Yeah. Oh, that was the computerized one. Is that one?
Computerized Compassion. Yeah, that was released in March.
Okay, yes, that's pretty
nice. I just released a new one last month, called LSD. They're all going on this EDM album that we're coming out with on December 1st.
Wow, can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, what do you call it? Yeah, no. Okay, well, then we'll have to collaborate then on some things.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Hopefully.
He said he's liking. Oh. Na, 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 na. Oh. I didn't need. No, 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 no. Na, 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 na. The man who is just like me.
Yeah, that's fabulous. I'm here dancing in my seat.
What's your life story?
My life story?
No, I'm like, you can take as long as you want, but I know you're not going to be able to tell your whole life story.
Well, the brief version, I guess, is just that, I don't know, music has always been an influence of mine, but it's never really been something that I looked at professionally. I've done a lot of things professionally, but it's just something that was always a hobby. It was always a serious hobby for me. And my life story in terms of music is just being influenced by different styles of music that I guess brings me here today.
Well, awesome. How do you hone your craft, or do you not really focus on honing your skills since you never really taken it super seriously, like for professionalism?
Well, I like to practice instruments. I still practice the piano, even though I probably should have practiced more when I was younger, but I still like to learn about different instruments and I like to write, so I like to write songs. I try to be creative in writing songs that can be uplifting.
Your accent is amazing.
Well, I people have said that I had a British accent, but
no, it's not British. It sounds like you're from somewhere close to Central America, but like it sounds like a mix of like a Spanish accent, like someone who speaks Spanish of some kind, or Portuguese, or a mix of that and like someone from like the island, like the Caribbean or something.
Well, I guess that's me because I have Cuban and Panamanian heritage, and also Jamaican, Arawak, and Maroon. So.
Well, no wonder.
So I guess that's me.
¿Tú hablas español?
Sí.
Ah, I only speak a little. I'm like teaching myself.
Hablas muy bien. Hablas español muy bien.
No, es mejor que nada. No, gracias. Solo entiendes pequeñas quips y cantidades del idioma español. Sin embargo, espero aprender más a través de mi teléfono.
Muy bien.
No, Duolingo is great. What is that? How much does your culture, by the way, influence your music? I would definitely say a lot because, you know, some of the bands you're in and even some of the albums you have out, like, have like, you know, names in different languages, like Spanish and French and stuff.
Yes. Well, being in Jamaica, you have Haiti, which speaks French on north, and then you have, you know, a lot of Spanish islands next door too as well. So there's a lot of influence from different islands that influence the language as well as the culture.
Clearly, sure.
You also have like a lot of the native, I guess, African music that influences also the reggae and so you have. You have a lot of the traditional music that influences the musical style. And so music is an expression of culture, and also you can also discover, through music, you can discover culture. You know? Because music is also a way of recording, events and history, so you can discover through music, you can discover other cultures, you know?
Really? Saint Cis, Saint Cis, quick, no.
Yes, it's in Haiti, you have French Creole, which obviously You're speaking, is that French Creole you're speaking?
No, it was just French for me. Oh, okay. I don't know French Creole. But French they're obviously Creole, so similar.
There's some similarities, but there's some differences. You know, they really have like a unique language, you know, because
isn't it like when you're Creole, aren't you like Spanish, French, and Black?
Well, like the island of Haiti, half of it is Haiti, and then the other half is Dominican Republic. And so you have French on one side and you have Spanish on the other side. So there was an influence. There was some borrowing from Spanish, and then some borrowing from French, and then you have the African. So I guess you're right. It is a mixture of those, the French, Spanish, and African.
Wow. That's crazy. I always thought that was the case, but I never really knew why it was the case. But what do you call it? How do you see the artist in the industry? Like, do you think that the artist is right where they need to be? Does the artist need more power than you see the artist getting right now? Does the artist need less power? You know, should it be that the industry needs the artist, or the artist needs the industry?
Well, I think in some ways, the industry, it caters to the public. In some ways, the industry drives the public. Like you were saying earlier, that because the music can also be a form of communication, and the industry can kind of put messages through music, they can promote certain styles of music. So it's really up to the public, because they have to make the determination whether, you know, they, what they want to hear, what they, I guess, who they promote. So, but at the same time, the industry has some level of manipulation in that, because the music industry now is very large, and a lot of different, a lot of the smaller labels, they united and merged, and you know, they formed, I guess, conglomerates, and so they have a lot of influence now on what gets promoted. But at the same time, it's still up to the people to decide what it is that they want to hear. And you know, that may change with time, because it's the media changes, you know, like back when we were buying like cassette tapes or CDs, you know, and now after CDs they went to MP3 players, and for a while everybody was, you know, on MP3 player, then they went to streaming. So as the media changes, then the artists, they have a lot of power now, in the sense that there's a lot that with technology artists can do now. For example, with BandLab, you have the ability to, I guess,
make a name for yourself. You have the ability to, yeah, with BandLab, with other platforms as well, you have the ability to put yourself up.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And those opportunities, you know, that it wasn't like that, you know, back in the day. So,
the problem with that still is oversaturation. So now that we have, so like it's kind of, the scale is kind of tilting the total opposite way, in a bad way as well. Cause it's like, first it was bad cause you didn't have the ability to put yourself out there as an artist. Now, yeah, we do have that ability, but because we have that ability, there are so many people out there that it's hard to get yourself noticed. Couple that with the fact that people are just taking anything and paying for anything musically, you know, and art-wise, you know, they can just literally, they don't even have to look for a real talent. They just can pick any old person.
Right.
And the studio is going to write the music for you. The studio is going to, the label is going to write the music. The label is going to do the promotion and the advertisement. The label is going to, you know, get your image together, and everything that you need to, you don't have to do anything. They'll even auto-tune you.
Right. Yeah. Well, back in the day, we used to have mixtapes, and mixtapes was like our band lab growing up, you know. You'd make a song and then you try to get it on a mixtape, you know, and then they'd make copies, you make little copies of the mixtape, and you'd share it around, and that was how we shared music, our own music back in the day, you know. But now it's like, you know, and then at that point, there was an argument, you know. I was like, oh, there's so many mixtapes, you know. If you get on a mixtape, you know, no one's ever gonna listen to your song on the mixtape, you know. And so nowadays, and so nowadays, when I think about, like, with exactly what you said, that, you know, about so many artists that are on these platforms, there's, you know, most likely it's going to be some new trend that comes around, new.
Mm-hmm. And you better hop on it quick.
Right. So you got to be, I guess, on the hunt for whatever the next new trend is.
Or you have to be the very few people who are going to be the innovators,
right,
or inventors, exactly, of that. Exactly.
Yeah.
New thing.
Yes.
Well, what is the measurement of success for you? So, like, how do you see success?
I think success is when you enjoy what you're doing, when you enjoy what you've done, you know? And so if you enjoy...
Does it have anything to do with making money off of it too? So you can support yourself?
Yeah, well, I mean, of course everyone needs money to live, so... However, money shouldn't be the measure of success, because you could have, you know, so much money, but if you're not responsible with your money, it could all disappear in a day. You know, so mm-hmm. it's a matter of just, having peace with what you're doing and what you've done, and being able to make it on your own. That's what success is, you know?
Definitely.
Doing what you enjoy.
Well, where do you want to go from here?
Well, I want to travel the world, travel to places I've never been, and that would be, I guess, my goal is to be able to travel.
I love traveling. I've traveled ever since I was a kid. Well, number one, I've moved from, you know, I never really stayed with the same people throughout my childhood. So, like, for the first 3 years, I lived with both of my parents. Mm-hmm. Then my sperm donor, I call him, took custody of me and my older brother. And then he killed my brother in front of me.
Oh yeah. Oh wow, that's
like
that's
8
horrible.
Or something. Oh, yeah, okay. I have a podcast on my an episode on my podcast about it. But we just got justice finally 20 years later, because I just testified against him and he went to jail for life.
Oh,
so,
wow.
2 months ago on July 1st. It took almost 20 years for him to go to jail for it. So it's just bullshit.
Oh, wow.
He was allowed to.
That is horrible.
Yeah, but what do you call it? Yeah, throughout my life, I was in the foster care system. I was with my, after, you know, he killed my brother and hid his body somewhere, which we still to this day don't know where Christian's body is. What do you call it? I had to go stay with his parents for 5 years. So I went to go stay with his mom and his stepdad, who were rich, and live with them, kind of like Cinderella, the rich life, but like they treated me like shit. So I wasn't technically rich because I didn't get anything from them, but you know, all kinds of stuff. But what do you call it? Then I went to go live with my mom. Mm-hmm. Then I went to the foster care system. So not only did all my living situations, like where I live, or not only was I able to travel, you know, and go on vacation in and out of the country, mm-hmm. when I was growing up, but I also moved from place to place and from people to people when I was growing up. So I love traveling.
Wow.
Because I've gotten used to it. And it's awesome. Because like when I was living with my grandparents, you know, they were wealthy. So when we went on vacation, we went on vacation. Like we went to Playa del Carmen, Mexico for 2 weeks, stayed in Rio Palace. It was literally like we were living in a palace. Like it was amazing. And we went swimming with the dolphins in Cancun. Cancun for a minute. We went to Jamaica 5 times.
What part of Jamaica?
I don't know, because I was a kid. I was like between the ages of 7 and between 7 and 9 years old. Mm. So I never knew where we went. I just know we had a great time and we were in Jamaica. Eating lobster and swimming in the pools and swimming at the beach. And it was just really cool. But what do you call it? So yeah, I feel you on the traveling thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind traveling like that, you know?
Yeah, it was really fun. What's been your main struggle trying to generate success?
Well, I think...
I guess that question doesn't really apply to you for the music because you're not trying to get success in the music, but like, I guess in life, generating success.
Well, it takes a lot of, I guess, organization to accomplish a goal. It takes planning, it doesn't necessarily have to take it, but for me, that I have to, if I wanted to accomplish something, I have to plan it, I have to, I guess kind of draw it out step by step, because that's the only way that I could accomplish it. I'm not good at like multitasking or just, you know, just, I guess, snapping my fingers and getting things done. I have to, I guess, plan it out. So for me, I've always had to kind of plan out how I was going to accomplish something.
Hmm.
And so I guess the struggle would be disorganization. So.
I feel you on that. I can be very disorganized.
Well, you're very organized. You always tag your music excellently.
Oh, well, in that regard, you know what? You know what? I thank you so much. You would not expect me to be so as disorganized in my actual life as I am. But if you look at my music, but it just shows that music is what I do and it's what I'm meant to do. And I love it so much. I have a passion for it because I do stuff with my music that I don't even do in my regular life. So like, I just cleaned my house up the other day. It was a mess. And it had been a mess for weeks to maybe a month and change. So like, you know, and then what do you call it? Just in general, I'm not usually too organized, but
I find that hard to believe, as organized as your music is.
But my music is really organized. That's what I'm saying. You just helped me realize that, you know, there's another telltale sign that music is what I'm supposed to be doing, and music is what makes me happy, because everything is, and I'm devoted to it, because I do my music like people don't understand, but I work full time and I still manage to put out music on a weekly basis, multiple times a week. There were years, the first 2 years, it's about to hit my third year in December, but the first 2 years I was putting out music consistently, like anywhere from like 3 songs a week to 10 songs a day.
Oh, wow.
When I first started, I'm being serious. When I first started, when I first started in December of 2019, I was, by the time we hit February of 2020 and I was 3 months on the platform, I had over 2,000 followers.
Oh, wow.
Because I was putting out an ungodly amount of music a day, because people could never keep up with that, because not only did I have a whole bunch of music I was sitting on, like crappy recordings that were crappy quality audio wise, but like the vocals were there, and the vocals were epic, and like, you know, people could hear that. So like they were like, wait, what is this? Then I'm a Black chick who's doing like, you know, Stone Temple Pilots and Deftones and middle class rut and shit like that. So people, when I was doing my rock stuff, that was helping too. And then not only was I putting out all that music, but I was also recording a lot of music simultaneously as I was putting out music that I was sitting on.
Oh, wow.
So like I was sitting on so much music before I started Band Lab that I just recorded on my phone.
Oh, yeah.
That it took me a good couple of weeks to maybe a month before I had finally put out every single song that I had in my phone.
Oh, wow.
Because I was like getting tired of putting the songs out in a day. So I would have to like take a break after putting so many out every day.
Oh, wow. Wow, 10 songs a day. That's quite a feat.
You know, it was crazy. I wouldn't recommend it, but what do you call it? What was I saying about to say? You had said something that triggered me saying that.
Oh, how organized you are with your music, your tags, and.
And then it led to something else, and somehow I got to that. I forgot. We'll hear it when we listen back. But what are the biggest obstacles for you personally, and for anyone in general who tries to pursue or maintain a career in the music industry?
Well, I think that I always think it takes a lot of, I guess, research, and not necessarily research that any artist would have to do particularly, but when I say research, I mean to kind of know what it is you're getting involved in any media industry. Know what they say often, it's like, who you know. You know, if you don't know someone that, if you don't know yourself, then, you know, get in touch with someone that does know, you know, in touch with the professionals that can assist you, get the, have the resources to be able to fill that area, whatever it is you need to get done. So it does take a lot of information to be successful in any industry. And if you don't have that information, then you should access those that do, because you could struggle you know, turning your wheels and trying to accomplish something, but you know, there might be someone out there that can help you with that next step. So just kind of communicating and building that network.
Well, what's your relationship, speaking of networks, what's your relationship with your fans, the people who follow you?
Well, I'm very accessible. You know, anybody can communicate with me either through messages or any platform. I'm very available to anyone who has to reach out to me for anything.
Well, what would you change about the industry?
Well, it would be nice to hear more upbeat music. There's music out there. There's a lot of music out there, that a lot of good artists out there that really the media doesn't, or the industry doesn't really pay as much attention to promote as artists that promote negative music. And it's not really something that, I mean, we could blame the industry for that, but at the same time, as artists, we should also look at ourselves. Are we just falling into this trap, or are we actually trying to make upbeat music ourselves? Because often what happens is that there's a trend, and the trend gets followed, and that's how it becomes popular.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that is as obvious as is occurring, but at the same time, are we helping it to occur, or are we really challenging it? Because if the artists don't make the negative music, then the industry wouldn't have it to promote. You know? So it's not something that we can always blame the industry on.
Are we making the changes? Are you in your personal life going forth and making the changes necessary to make sure you're not implementing and perpetuating the same cycle of abuse? Join us next time on Lens Bends when we discuss this further with DJ TJ DK. I couldn't even end it right because I knocked my phone over. What's your what's been your favorite platform for music or application?
As far as DAW or social platform?
Overall, including both of those, like pick one platform that overall has just helped you musically, or not helped you, but that you like the most musically.
Well, I always liked Cubase as far as its the sounds. I like the rich sounds of Cubase, and so Cubase. I haven't used it recently, but I did use it back in the day. But I like Cakewalk. I like to use Cakewalk because it's for being a free software, it has a lot of features.
It does. It used to be $600, didn't it?
With Sonar? Yeah, well, Sonar was commercial. It used to be commercial, yeah. And I don't remember the cost, but it was commercial. But Cakewalk is it's pretty amazing for a free app. You don't find too many software applications that are free with that much capabilities.
I've got to say the same thing about BandLab. Like BandLab, I say this to everybody, and I've said this before in another interview or two, but you know, it is literally the social media of music platforms. Like, it's amazing. You get the social media aspect of it. You can get in contact with people immediately, depending on how quickly they get back with people. You can see people's personal growth. You can see their day-to-day. So you can post about things you like, or whatever the case may be. You can post videos from other platforms. and grow your fan bases with other platforms, then you can make music with the same platform. So like, and you can do it, you could do it with your phone. If you, if you're like broke and you don't have a computer, you could do it on your computer. And then you can download the Cakewalk software and use a real studio and DAW. So like, it's just amazing. And then you can work
really amazing
internationally.
Yeah, what's really amazing about VanLab too is that, I mean, they let you upload any amount of songs, you know? There's no limit to the songs that they let you work on
and
upload. And that's,
and
that's pretty
free.
Surprising when you compare it to any other music platform. I mean, most music platforms, they either make you pay or you have a limit either in the size of the songs or, you know, the number of songs you can have. But VanLab, which is pretty remarkable for having that many users being able to store all that music, is pretty amazing.
Like, I work with people, I work with a woman in Venezuela. I work with people in Nigeria, men and women in Nigeria, like OG Wilson and Lil Vino, and people all over the world. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty amazing. It's real amazing.
Yeah. Well, have you any beefs? Chicken or beef? Have you any beefs with anybody on the platform or in this line of work? Have you ever had a bad experience with someone?
Not any serious beef, you know. Just...
You don't have to give names. You can just tell us like what kind of stuff happened if you want to.
I mean, I can't really think of a real serious beef. In writing songs, sometimes we write songs that are boasty, you know, but I don't think of it as any personal attack on anyone or anything like that, no. But I can't think of navigating the social environment of the app is, you know, it's kind of tricky because it's, you know, you just have to, I observe like a lot of conflict sometimes going on between artists, but I don't even know if it's something that they take seriously or if they're just joking or, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. I'll tell you about one situation with me in particular. What do you call it? There was this girl who liked one of my songs, and then I redid the song, reworked the song, and then I sent it to her in a message because she didn't like the first one. So she sent a question mark, and I was like, I sent another question mark. And then I was like, what do you mean? No, I put, this is a song that you liked previously, and I reworked it, so I sent it to you. And she sent me this post. She didn't even pay attention to that or the song. And then she sent me this post from her page where she was like complaining about like, you know, some medical problem and some emotional problem and this, that, and the third. And I didn't really understand why she sent it to me, because it just seemed like she was like having a venting sesh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after you just, you know, acted kind of weird in the text messages, or in the direct messages, I don't really know why. It didn't really make sense to me. So I just ignored it. And then, what happened? I think I blocked her because I was like, okay, you know what? What do you call it? She's on some weird stuff. Mm-hmm. So then she, somebody sent me something. One of my fans sent me something where she was basically calling me out and she was talking shit about me. And, she was saying she was gonna do a diss track about me. So I slid in the comments and I was like, girl, you better make it good because I want to have something to respond to. Right. And, you know, she was white, by the way. I do have to mention that it played into the situation. So long story short, she was, I saw the comments and she was talking all this disgusting shit about me. I started going off on her in the comment section. And then she basically accused me of saying that she needed to be raped, gang raped. And so she started wishing bad things on me. And she started making public posts, claiming that I was attacking her and playing the victim. And then she said in one of her public posts, she's gonna call the police on me. Some of the people who were chiming in with her turned around and were like, wait, why are you calling the police on her? And she was like, she said I should be raped and this, that, and the third and whatever, whatnot. And she's harassing me. And they were looking at her like, what? And they had seen all of this transpire. So they knew that, you know, she was making some shit up. Right. So she basically, they ended up leaving, you know, unfollowing her and then following me.
Oh, wow.
Her own fans.
Wow.
But yeah, it's crazy. I think the majority of it, but that was like a one-off situation. Like the majority of the problems that I seem to have with the platform, and I don't have them too often, but it's been often enough, are that people, especially dudes, will get upset that I am generating the success that I'm generating.
Oh, yes.
So, you know.
Yeah, that's something that with success, you know, there's always envy. So I can imagine how a lot of people would be envy of you as you're able to do so well.
It's just weird because it's just like one dude was upset because I was doing covers. And I'm like, he's like, why don't you do original stuff? You'd be really good. Yada, yada, yada. We put all our heart and soul into these lyrics and into getting our stuff right and performing our original stuff just for people like you to end up trending on covers. And I'm like, wait. Did you miss the originals that were trending? Did you miss my originals that are trending? Did you miss the fact that the songs on my page that have the most likes are originals?
Right.
You know? And then this other dude was upset because I sang a Swedish song. And he thought I did so well, he thought I was from Sweden. So then he got mad at me when I told him I was American. Mm-hmm. And I'm American. And he was like, you're a pirate. Stop pirating our music.
Oh, wow.
Don't put Swede in the hashtags if you're not from Sweden.
Oh yeah. Oh wow.
So it's different things with me, but that's why I boil it down to jealousy.
Yeah, a lot of it would be envy, and part of it is just with social media in general. There's just been a tendency ever since social media's been out to, I guess, really have communication that you wouldn't normally have with, you know, people entertain.
Yeah, because people have internet balls.
Yeah. People entertain thoughts that they wouldn't normally entertain in another social setting. So it's like, yeah. How do you... And that's with just social media in general, though. And one thing that I guess with BandLab that's made it challenging is that, you know, you have easier access because, you know, it's easy to communicate with each other. And then with that ease of communication, it's the potential for problems that arise.
Yeah, it's a lot of people making diss tracks on people.
I've noticed that.
Now look, I have heard some that are like, damn, okay, this is some good shit. Like, some masterfully done, like...
I haven't heard any masterfully done. Look, I heard a few, maybe, that were okay, that
look,
made me laugh, but...
Let me go to that right now. Let me go to it right now, because I'm going to have to tell you the title. Now, I'm going to send it to you through VanLab, so that you can look into it, because it's too... It don't even make no sense how good this damn song is. But it's also about this this dude who gave me some issues, and he actually is pretty crazy. So what do you call it? In this particular situation, it seems like they were pretty spot on with their assessment, but it's got almost 2,000 plays, and it just came out in June, and it's got over 300 likes.
Oh wow!
But I just sent it to you. It's called Addicted.